Hi everyone, Pamela Larg here, your host of the Energy Transitions podcast. If you enjoy listening to our bi-weekly podcast, make sure to hit the subscribe button and take a moment to leave a rating or review wherever you're listening. This will help us spread the message and connect with our community. Thanks again for listening to the Energy Transitions podcast from Enlit and Friends. Portugal set a record in 2023 by running exclusively on renewable energy for 6 days. It's a small country with big ambitions to phase out fossil fuels, and according to the World Economic Forum, it ranks among the top 20 nations best prepared for the energy transition. What makes Portugal so well prepared, and what are the elements that have allowed the country to successfully incorporate such a high rate of renewable energy? To answer these questions and learn more about this unique landscape, I joined Pedro Jorge, President of the Portuguese Renewable Energy Association, at their offices in Lisbon. I'm Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast. Pedro, thank you so much for joining me. It's an absolute pleasure. We're talking about Portugal and the renewable landscape. If I can start by mentioning the fact that Portugal set a record by generating all of its capacity with renewable energy for 6 days straight. How did Portugal do that?
Well, we've been investing in renewables for a long time, and I would say that we are now more than 40 years investing in renewables. And the first ones that we invested in was basically hydro. And then by the end of the 90s, we start, when the European Commission developed that policy, we start installing wind at the time. Of course, with feed-in tariff mechanisms, as they were used at the time. And we took the opportunity to develop very quickly, more or less around, I would say, 7 gigawatt of hydro and around 4 to 5 gigawatt of wind. So fortunately, at the end of the year, when we got this 6 days in a row where renewables fulfill electricity consumption alone, it's a mix between hydro and wind. And it's really an advantage of what Portugal has as renewable resources when it comes to hydro, wind, and sun. And so, because we start developing renewables very early due to the fact that Portugal does not have any mineral resources regarding oil, natural gas, and coal, we had a very early incentive to start looking for alternatives that were from renewable source. Then in 2001, and by the end of the 90s, there was a policy that Portugal, in terms of decarbonization at the time for those targets and energy independence, there was an incentive to generate electricity from other sources than oil at the time, coal, or even natural gas that came later. So we actually had that trend already in our policymaking, because for us, going renewables was actually not only an environmental exercise, it was also an economical exercise, because we didn't have to import more fuel, so our trade balance was more balanced. We were able to generate fixed capital in the country, attract investment, generate employment. So there was this economical positive cycle that came from adopting renewables in Portugal. And basically, now that we are moving towards our targets, which are quite ambitious, we are installing what was lacking in terms of PV, because may I remind you that we were intervened by the IMF in 2011. So we were in a very tight financial constraining, awarding feed-in tariffs and support mechanisms for renewables between 2011 and 2015. And when the clean energy package came, we were already ahead with part of the capacity in terms of hydro and wind, and we just ran to install what is PV. Then with that portfolio of three renewable sources, it actually allows for you to think about green hydrogen, because you are with load factors above 4,000 hours a year. You can think about synthetic fuels or renewable fuels from non-biological origin. And I think the previous government and the previous Secretary of State, both of them, both João Galamba and Ana Fontoura, they actually continue to support, of course, this started with João Galamba, continue to support the increase of the renewables incorporation in power. And then, of course, when we came with Fit for 55 and RepowerEU, from the European Commission, we understood that hard-to-abate sectors need to be decarbonized also. So transportation, sustainable aviation fuels, transportation for maritime transportation, land, railways, all of that came into place and we understood that fulfilling our own requirements, we could include this policy and look for an horizon of 15 to 20 years and be highly independent in terms of energy, having the sources from renewable sources. And so basically, the government was clever in adapting the directives, renewable, market renewable. And fortunately, we are on the point now that in 2023, average yearly, we had 70% of power from renewable sources. January 81, February 80. Of course, we have favorable weather conditions with wind and rain. And now we are moving to see where we reach by the end of the year because we continue to incorporate PV, which will actually fulfill the gap which hydro cannot fulfill in the summer. And we're looking positive to see if we're going to reach 75 to 80% by the end of 2024 in terms of renewables incorporating power generation.
Pedro, clearly Portugal is an example for the rest of Europe. It would be interesting to understand some of the lessons that were learned, or perhaps the lessons that could be conveyed to other countries in Europe that are trying to achieve the same thing.
Well, I think at the beginning, we were not incumbent in terms of power generation. The natural resources were there. The government designed policies with feed-in tariffs that actually make the projects bankable. We were always looking towards renewable incorporation, and that helped a lot because it was not only an environmental exercise in terms of reducing emissions of greenhouse gases, but it was also, as I mentioned previously, an economic exercise. And we all know that when we install renewables, you don't have one big power station in one place. You just distribute it along the country. And that brings local economy advantages for generating jobs, generating investment for indirect jobs. So if I would say we had, let's say, regulatory stability, we were not a country that was attacked by international agendas. We have this portfolio of renewables that helps a lot. We have very high level of institutions, universities, technical institutions that help develop this at the time. Our technical people, high skilled and blue collar, are highly, let's say, favorable in working in this. So they are skilled, they have the experience. And so when you combine these factors of regulatory stability, having the renewables portfolio there, of course, there's a lot of improvement room for developing the grid and for speeding up license and permitting. But this is now being a fact where 10 years ago it was not, because the amount of renewables you need to integrate on the grid were much lower. And so you had room to do this. Now we are struggling with the targets are too ambitious. What we need to meet by 2030 in Europe, which is 55% emissions reduction. And with the REPowerEU, we need to achieve 10 million tons of green hydrogen, all of the targets of 1 terawatt of power. So all of this is bringing a supply side constraint that public institutions need to adapt to treat this amount of projects that will lead to this amount of capacity. But besides that, I think basically the teachings in a nutshell is we had the regulatory stability. We didn't act like Spain did at a certain moment in time. We had the proper institutions to scientifically and technically develop this. We had a grid in a condition that was, for the conditions at the time, taking the advantage of being properly used. We have this portfolio of water, wind, and sun. And so I think all of this, and of course, the necessity of looking for energy independence, because we didn't have fossil fuels, as I mentioned previously, natural gas, oil, and coal. So this takes us into a trend that for us, it's not only that we need to do this because we need to environmentally comply, we also need to become energy independent with economic affordability. And this is the reason that took us where we are today.
That makes perfect sense. I would like to ask you about the role of gas as a transition fuel.
Natural gas.
Is this something that Portugal is still considering? Is the energy transition really a transition, or have you moved to the point where gas is no longer a big part of the energy mix?
What we have in our modeling today regarding 2030 and 2045 is that by 2030, we will have CCGTs, so combined cycle gas turbines will be there, and we're going to need natural gas to, let's say, balance demand response or storage with hydro or batteries or even green hydrogen will not be there. So we need to continue using natural gas. Of course, we are phasing out natural gas. On the other hand, we are not sure how maritime transportation is going to be handled. So if we increase the usage of natural gas in maritime transportation, then of course the baseload of usage of natural gas will increase. But in terms of the power sector, we are phasing out, and the expectation is that with batteries, hydrogen, green hydrogen, and all the renewable capacities and demand side response, by 2045, we will not be using natural gas on power generation. This is the target. Of course, there is a target, there is a strategy, and then there's reality. So we need to try and mitigate this. But because we have a very good hydrological year, 2023, we reduce our energy consumption of natural gas for power generation by 44%. So we are actually consuming half of the natural gas that we consumed in 2022. And so I think we are moving on the right direction. Of course, we need to keep in mind that this part of Europe, Southern Europe, is droughting. So droughts are increasing. So availability of water might not be a continuous situation. We might have volatility in terms of the available resources, how we can store in dams, how we're going to do pump hydro. But I think the way we are at the moment, looking for 2045 and not be using natural gas for power generation is highly likely. Of course, it really depends on the cost of all the other technologies until then and how CO2 emissions will be priced on the European trading system. So basically, that's the tools that we are looking at. And I think it would be feasible to reach 2045 without natural gas on the power mix.
Pedro, I want to ask your opinion. Do we have the skills and experience, and you touched on it in a previous answer, to achieve this energy transition within Portugal, within the borders of this country? Do you have the skills and experience to really push the renewable agenda?
We do. Of course, we do not manufacture all the equipment that's required for the energy transition. We have industrial incorporation for wind farms, aerogenerators, but we do not have what Europe is lacking on the side of batteries and PV. But assuming that the equipment will be available at economic affordable prices in terms of CapEx, and that we do not have this financial and energetic crisis at the same time, I would say that in terms of skilled workers, white collar and blue collar, institutions, state-owned institutions, university, technological centers, skilled people, if that is available at the time, we are in the condition to actually incorporate the energy transition as a reality. As I was mentioning at the beginning, we already had 80% on a monthly average or an accumulated month in terms of renewable energy into power generation. So I think the skills are there, the way that the electrical system is managed by REN, the way they are looking at this. We have a lot of experience of incorporating high levels of renewables with volatility, with frequency, with all of that. So I think we have the conditions to actually look positive and optimistic for the energy transition, initially on the power sector. Then I think what's going to follow next is industrial decarbonization, transportation. And of course, by that time, then we're going to have cars, like common cars, that will be the last slice that we can drop down. Although electric mobility is being quite adopted in Portugal. But as you know, the cars are much more expensive still than there are combustion engines with gasoline or diesel.
Speaking of experience, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and Apron?
Well, what can I tell? I'm 55 years old. I just took the decision of having a kid when I was 53, which is the most insane decision of my life, but I'm very happy with it. I'm a mechanical engineer. I have an MBA in finance and operations. I worked all my life in infrastructure. I started with natural gas, then I did water and sanitation, solid waste management. I worked in 14 years abroad. I worked in Brazil, Sub-Saharan Africa, Middle East, Europe, US. And then I was working at African Development Bank when I was invited to join Apren as the CEO. And I took the opportunity and I didn't look back ever since. So I had a lot of experience in other infrastructure, which helped a lot. I had experience in financing water and wastewater concessions, BOTs. So that helped a lot to look at this, where we are moving away from feed-in tariffs into CFDs, and we are looking more and more into market between supply and demand. And so I think that experience of other infrastructure, natural gas, as I mentioned, water and sanitation, solid waste management, and renewable energy before, helped me a lot in this role. And of course, the fact that I had more than 25 years experience also helped to look at this as a big puzzle and the big game. So from an helicopter perspective, it's not only about environmental licensing. It's about funding. It's about bankability. It's about skilled people. It's about getting an organization working. It's understanding what is the balance sheet of a company. So that helped a lot to develop my job, and I'm very happy with it.
And Apron, tell us a little bit about what you do here.
We actually have more than 210 members now. We represent more than 90% of all renewable capacity installed. We are a generations association, and we have a very, very young, professional, and enthusiastic team. And what we do basically is we advocate, we create level playing field between the interests of our members and what government and consumers want. We follow up all of the recent trends, both globally and at European level, with the other associations. We are members of all the European associations that are relevant: Solar Power Europe, Hydrogen Europe, Wind Europe, EAS, all of them. And what we try to create here is being a source of electricity literacy, energy, and trying to actually advocate between all of the interests in different energy sources, try to ensure that governments, and especially our own, adapt and do not look back at what is considered the energy transition with renewable energy as the final energy consumption. And so basically we advocate, we discuss legal frameworks, we give opinions, we answer to public consultations, we draw models, we do studies, everything, always trying to speed up or to keep the momentum of renewables incorporation of the power sector and, of course, the other energy sectors also.
I think we actually met one or two of your members while we were here in Portugal. Very Great. Interesting innovation in the renewable space.
Yeah, there are some things that we are doing that we can be proud of.
Absolutely. Final question. What would you like to see in Portugal's energy transition? What would you like the result to be if you could imagine the perfect result?
Well, that is pretty straightforward. We are in a world that we need to decarbonize. I don't think that continue to deny that the climate change is here and that we're going to suffer a huge impact from it. I don't question that anymore. So each member state needs to give its contribution, and we need to take advantage of certain things that Portugal have in their advantage. We are a quite small country, so developing our grid to a level that we need, it will not be difficult. It just needs and requires political courage to do this, so that I can take advantage of all the other geographical locations that are good and that I'm not using, because both governments and the regulator keep stalling approving this investment in the grid. I think we are in the condition to actually achieve 90% of renewable incorporation on the power sector by 2030. And I would like to see commitment and the value chain completely aligned, developed, and working at the pace that it's required for us to move not only in the power sector, but also in the hard-to-abate sectors, and look in the perspective that we will meet all the targets that we are submitting to the European Commission that will now be binding by 2030, 2032, that we can develop all of the solar farms we need, increase our onshore wind farms that we need, develop our offshore wind, make sure that we have a system to actually incentivize demand response, making sure that both Portugal and Spain already agreed on a policy for battery storage and green hydrogen storage. So if we can do all of this, that's what I would like to see by 2030. And I would hopefully love to be retired by 2030. But I'm not sure it's going to happen, but if it is, that will be a good thing. That means that my job was done.
Well, we'll certainly keep an eye on Portugal, and we wish you all the best for your retirement.
Thank you so much for having me here. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your insights, and thank you to our listeners for joining us. Until next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions podcast, brought to you by Enlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Log, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit enlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.